are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
My guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast today is Penny Anderson, client director for PR agencies at Kantar. She's also known as Kiwi Girl in the UK, a school dropout who traveled across the world to start a new life at 20. She worked as a recruiter before finding her niche in the PR industry. Welcome to the Elephant in the Room podcast, Penny. Thank you for being a guest.
Thank you so much, Sudha. And I have to say that I was honored to be asked. So thank you so much. I'm delighted to join you.
My first question is a rather obvious one. What is the elephant in the room for you?
The elephant in the room for me is very much around education and around people's backgrounds and the insistence of some companies that you must have achieved a certain educational level or you must have a degree where actually it's not required. It's such a bugbear of mine. I was asked in a job interview once if I regretted not having a degree, and then they actually used the fact I didn't have a degree to not give me the job. And I was quite glad I didn't get the job because it's not probably somewhere I would have wanted to work. Actually, I went to a state school and I didn't go to university, and I'm actually pretty pleased with who I am and what I've achieved. So I get very excitable over this, and I just want everyone to be treated equally, judge people on merit and their skills, not their accent and what their father did for a living.
That's such a great perspective. You've had an unusual path to leadership, and it connects with what you were talking about just now. Tell us something about your journey.
Sure. And it's funny that you say that, because I don't really see it that way at all. I don't think that I have done anything particularly spectacular. I guess I've just been living it, and I've always just done the best I can. I grew up in New Zealand, left school at 16. I arranged a job interview from a payphone at my school to work for a recruitment agency as their receptionist to replace an elderly woman. And I was ringing at 16 years old saying, you know, well, I want to be a receptionist and I want to be on this much a year. And I think they were so taken aback by my confidence that they agreed to an interview and gave me the role. And right from a very, very early age, I've never, ever considered anything beneath me, whatever I was asked to do, I would do it at the best of my ability. If I was filing, answering the phone, then I did them well. So when I actually looked around and thought, actually, I can be a recruitment consultant. So I asked them. I just said, look, is there a chance for me to become a recruitment consultant? And again, they were sort of taken aback, but I think they were quite used to me by then. And they were sort of like, yeah, great, we'll train you up. I was still probably only 17, 18 at the time, became a recruitment consultant. And I asked for a promotion and I got it. I made the decision to leave New Zealand at the age of 20, which now looking back, I think that seems very, very young. But at 20, I packed up a couple of bags of clothes. I had saved £500, which seemed like a huge amount of money at the time, and certainly was 27 years ago. I arrived at Heathrow, got picked up by a girlfriend who lived there already, but I had nowhere to stay. I had no job, got a B&B. Got a temp job a few days later and then was made permanent from that temp role. Again, I was working in a recruitment agency. So I'd always just worked in recruitment agencies, and I just felt that I needed to go out and actually experience life outside of a recruitment agency. So I made what I believe is probably the best career decision of my life. And I accepted a job working for PIMS, which I don't know anybody sort of listening would be old enough to remember PIMS. And I worked really closely with Alex, who was the MD, and he knew everybody in the industry. He basically just introduced me to everybody. And these people that he introduced me to are still in my professional life. You've got all the people who we were the same age and we were all coming up at the same time. They're now running their own an agency. So I'm now leading a division at Kantar. It was just fantastic. And I loved it. And I just grasped it with both hands. I went to every networking event. I went to every drinks event, every lunch, and just got to know everybody. And it was just incredible. And then after leaving PIMS, I worked at PR Newswire. And then eventually I started work at Precise. Precise was taken over by Kantar. And 12 years later, I'm still there. But that's kind of my journey. And as I say, I just believe I have taken every opportunity. I have made the most of it and just made a real effort to speak to as many people as possible. And also, I have never, ever, ever forgotten Mo at FTI, who is a very dear friend of mine and someone that I met 27 years ago when she was at FTI. And she once said to me, she said, why do you only invite senior people to the events? And I thought, well, I just, you know, automatically assumed that's what you're supposed to do. And she said, no, you need to invite the junior people as well, because they might be the ones making the decision. And that was such an important lesson to me.
There are some very obvious lessons in there on different routes to leadership. What would your advice be to people entering the profession?
So first of all, I'd probably want to just shake them and say, if you want to do something, make it happen. Do not sit there waiting for someone to give you an opportunity. Decide where you want to work. Have a look on LinkedIn. Find out if someone is speaking at a network event. Make up excuses to link in with them. Just have the confidence to really reach out. All through my career, I've been willing to do whatever I've needed to do, be very good-natured. No one wants anyone difficult working with them. Yeah, it doesn't mean not questioning either. You know, there's a massive cliche, but really the only person that is stopping you to success is you. I never had a plan except that I knew I wanted to be self-sufficient. My mother always worked. She was always the kind of more of the breadwinner in the house. I knew that I didn't want to be reliant on anyone. So I think that a lot of my decisions about what I did meant that it was, you know, in a way that I could be self-sufficient. I also wanted to be someone that people looked up to and actually that people saw as someone who has done okay and actually to be respected. But what I would say to anyone wanting to get into the public relations industry or indeed in any of the sectors surrounding the public relations industry is go to every single networking event you can. You will be amazed at just how quickly you get known. Find someone who has spoken at an event and drop them an email or a message on LinkedIn saying how much you enjoyed listening to them speak and you enjoyed this particular part of it. And as I say, go to everything. Everything is online at the moment. It is more difficult, but actually in some ways a little bit easier because you can see everybody's name, you can see everybody's faces, and you can see everybody who talks. And you won't always get a response and you won't always get the response you want, but don't give up.
Great advice. How should industry leaders be encouraging these different paths to leadership? It's still fairly closed in the sense that people refer people to other people and there are not that many apprenticeship schemes. And this may seem exclusionary for young people who may probably be the first person who's getting out and moving into PR.
I think that, to take your first question, I think the industry has definitely changed a lot over the last 27 years. And I do think that there is some way to go. But I also think that organizations like CIPR and PRCA are doing amazing things. And I love the apprenticeship scheme from the PRCA. I love the fact that you have to pay your apprentice. If you want to be a member of the PRCA and you want to sign up to that, you have to pay your apprentice. That is such a key step. You can't take an unpaid internship. You know, most people can't do that. Particular agencies are doing great things to change the diversity of the PR sector. I think agencies like Fleischmann and Large Fishburne doing blind CVs. Lanson's for years have actively encouraged team members to come back after having children and offer huge flexibility around that. We need to make it, though, just a lot clearer in our outreach that the industry doesn't care about your accent, your school, what your parents or your grandparents did, and your reach your success on merit. Going back to your previous question, what can I do to actually put myself forward? Don't think that, oh God, you know, I'm probably not going to fit in there. I'm not going to apply for that job. Do apply for that job. Do tell them why you are right for that job. If you don't get an interview and you see a pattern, then do report it to one of the industry bodies. Actually, just make your recruitment policies very, well, just have a policy to take on merit. As I say, I love the blind CV idea because people think that they can tell a lot about a person by their name. But then how far do you go? There's a lot of work to be done. I found it fascinating. When I started working at a recruitment agency, I realized that actually that already meant I was a couple of tiers above some other people. And I couldn't quite figure that out because we don't really have that in New Zealand. New Zealand is genuinely a melting pot, and New Zealand wouldn't have the population it does without immigrants. And I found it extraordinary in my first role in the UK. One of the things I would have to say is what their accent was and did they dress West End or City? And, oh no, we couldn't put them in that organisation because they've got an Essex accent. And I just remember sitting there absolutely dumbfounded, thinking, I don't really understand what's going on here. It took me a number of years to realize what people's prejudices actually were. And then a few more years to realize, actually, I can help fight that. And I love it when someone will be on a call and say, oh, well, of course, you know, people like us. And I think, what do you mean? What do you mean people like us? So it is about having the confidence in yourself. So certainly the industry needs to do more to encourage, you know, paths to actually join the PR industry. And then actually when you're in the agency or you're in the in-house comms team, then the company themselves, they need to make sure that everybody is given exactly the same opportunities, that someone isn't promoted because they're the ones that have spoken out on a meeting or they're the ones that have turned up in a smart suit and a Hermes scarf just because that's what their FTSE 100 client will want. Actually, just look beyond that. Look beyond someone's appearance. Look beyond everything. Can they do the job?
Any advice that you'd give to your younger self?
Yeah, there is actually. This is probably the easiest question you've asked because I really only discovered over the last 15 years that actually the way I am is actually okay. I am enthusiastic. I am genuinely very happy. I don't take any rubbish. I won't stand for bad behavior. I won't stand for various things. I can be very stubborn. I know these things. I am not perfect. Like everybody, I am not perfect. For so long when I was younger, I felt so different. And I was too smiley. I was too happy. Everyone around me just seemed to have a bit of a harder edge. I wasn't hard enough. It was about 15, 20 years ago when one of my friends said to me, you do realize people actually don't care what we do. They just want to spend time with you because they like spending time with you. And I realized that actually the qualities that I have, I should just embrace them. I shouldn't try and fit anyone else's mold. Yes, I have a lot to say, as you can tell. I have a lot to say. I will always put my point across. If someone says, has anyone got an opinion on this? I will generally have an opinion. And I'm quite happy to share that opinion. I'm not a great one for silence. And, you know, I used to try and hide that. I used to think, oh no, you can't always say anything. You can't always be the one. Actually, do you know what? At the age of 47, I think that I've realized that actually, do you know what? It's actually quirky. I don't mind being the person that is always enthusiastic. So to my younger self, genuinely, I would say, just embrace who you are and embrace your quirks and just go with it.
So much great advice, Penny. But is some of it also a function of being a woman that you face these thoughts on being outspoken, on having opinions?
Yeah, as a woman, we often question ourselves and we often say, oh my gosh, should I be here? You know, should I be in this position? Should I be leading this meeting? Should I be actually talking to my client like that? As for being a woman, it's been really interesting because I would say that I haven't had too much of an issue with being a woman and, you know, being free to speak my mind. However, there have been roles that I've had that it's been what I would call a bit of a boys' club. And if you weren't going going with them out drinking all night and to various establishments and all the rest of it. If you weren't doing that, then actually the next day when it came to picking a team for a project, then you probably weren't even in the mix. Or, you know, oh, we didn't want to give that to you because you seem like, you know, you seem a bit stressed at the moment and you've got quite a lot on your plate. Well, okay, you wouldn't say that to a man. We're starting to work for Kantar, and in Kantar there are some truly inspirational senior women working there. And I realized that actually they didn't need to go out all night, every night, be one of the boys. They could just put their points across. They were listened to. But it was a real culture thing as well. The culture has to be there. I have at times gone back and I've either spoken to senior women who I've known in the industry and asked them for advice. But the main thing I would say is that in your gut, if you feel something is a bad behavior, then it probably is bad behavior. One of my colleagues, someone who had a very short-lived career at somewhere where I worked, said to me once, why do my jobs always get done last? And I said, well, you need to look at how you speak to people. I said, if you just send an email going, I need this done by midday, and you know, it doesn't matter how junior the person is doing it, they have an option of whether to do my job first or yours. Do you think they're going to do my job first? When I go, hi, how's your day going? Really appreciate it. When you have a moment, if you could get this done. It's simple things like that.
Yeah. And obviously organizational culture enables good behavior. What or who inspires you every day, Penny?
That's actually a really difficult question. What inspires me is to work very, very hard to keep my mental health in check. So I walk for miles every day. I love looking at trees and being in nature. I'm also really, really inspired by seeing people grow, people I've encouraged along the way. I've worked with so many people over the years that have lacked confidence. And I love now being in a meeting with some of those people that I met 10, 12 years ago, who now sort of stand up in meetings and go, that's not right. And that really, really inspires me because it shows me that actually, do you know what I'm doing is okay. As I mentioned before, being really inspired by some fantastic senior women at Kantar. You don't need to be one of the boys in order to proceed. I'm really inspired too by women who have not listened to anyone telling them they can't. I'm inspired by Alison Clark. I'm inspired by Claire Parsons. These two women are women who have gone out of their way throughout their careers, who have reached the highest position anyone can reach in an agency. They have never, ever, ever lost their human touch. They always make time to speak to everybody, to actually show proper leadership skills. It would be remiss of me as a Kiwi not to mention Jacinta Ardern as well. She is incredibly inspiring. And I love the fact that there is a Kiwi woman on the international stage being held up as a great example, one of the great examples of a female leader. She attended a state school. She did go to university, but you know, she was young. She was pregnant and not married, and she became prime minister. Now, that could probably only happen at the moment somewhere like New Zealand, but I love the fact that that is actually now going to have other countries sort of look at that, or other women look at that and go, oh yeah, hang on a sec, I can do that too. One of the main things I love about her is that she lets her personality shine through in everything she does. So whether that's her being smiley and explaining why she's done a certain thing, or showing incredible compassion at sort of, you know, awful events that have happened in New Zealand. She's just truly inspirational, and I just will watch everything that she does.
Couldn't agree with you more on that. What an inspiration and what a role model she is. In a post-COVID-19 and Black Lives Matter world, what can organizations do to be more purposeful?
With Black Lives Matter, our CEO stood up and said, look, I know I've done a lot, but I know I could do a lot more. That's a very, very brave thing to say. I like the fact that people are saying, yeah, we do have an issue, and we do have a disparity with pay, with leadership positions. But I do think that the first thing that any company should do is they should just take a long, hard look at themselves and be totally truthful. I have been a judge on PRCA awards since the year dot, and know, diversity. I'm always in one of the agency categories, so one of the agency of the year categories. And I have always been astounded at the diversity question. When the questioners tell us how diverse your agency is, oh, we have two women on the board and three people from a BAME background. What does that mean? That doesn't mean anything. What are those people doing? Are they on the board? That's a real soapbox moment for me, in that, you know, people like to think that they're ticking the black box, but actually, has it genuinely been someone who needed help? Or is it someone who would have got there on their own anyway? Organizations need to be so very aware that for 47-year-old women in a house in Kingston with lots of parks and my own room to work in every day, very, very, very different to someone else who is perhaps flat sharing, is younger, is in their first position. They're not getting that networking from an office environment. And my one-to-ones with my team, with my direct reports, probably half of it is not spent on work-related. Half of it is, tell me how you are. And I just listen. I listen to them telling me about what's happening with their family, with their grandparents, with their partners, what volunteer work they're doing. Do all youngsters volunteer now? I have been blown away by the stories I've heard, absolutely blown away. But we need to really, really listen. We need to listen to our teams. And, you know, are they struggling? There's different ways of asking them, but, you know, how are you finding it? Have you got outside today? We need to make sure that people are okay. Once we can start mixing again, I think, you know, we are going to have to make a real effort to travel and see our teams as well, just to check in and see how they're doing. But I think it's going to be very difficult. And that's why, you know, every organization needs leaders who are very comfortable in their own skin. They're very comfortable being very personal and giving a bit of themselves. So, you know, sometimes I'm having a really bad day. If I'm speaking to one of my team and they'll say, well, how are you doing, Penn? I quite happily say, do you know what? I'm really frustrated today because of this. This has been happening. And it makes them open up. Whereas if I sit there and say, oh, everything's absolutely fine, everything's perfect, then they start to think, oh, is there something wrong with me? Because I'm getting frustrated at something. So by sharing a couple of frustrations, by just showing that real empathy to their situation, is just so, so important.
Agree with you, Penny. Mental health is such an important thing. And you've spoken about a couple of the things that you're doing with your teams to ensure that they're doing okay. What are the things that you do to keep yourself feeling good and looking after your mental health?
So for the first month of lockdown, I made the decision not to drink any alcohol. So the first 12 weeks was really difficult and I couldn't go outside. I've got a gorgeous tree in my back garden. I would make sure that I walked outside. I would literally sit in a chair. I wouldn't look at anything, a book or anything. I would literally just look at trees and the plants in my garden. But the other thing that I do is I carve out time for myself. My husband and I don't have children, so I appreciate it's a lot easier for me. But I go to bed around about 8:30, 9 o'clock every single night. So I always have that hour or a couple of hours and I'm just reading in bed and I'm so relaxed and it's quiet. And 4 weeks ago, we were very lucky to adopt Jasper, the cockapoo, which you've seen some pictures of. He has actually done more for my mental health than I think all the therapy in the world, because you have to go out. And I actually once a week put out a specific time in my diary. And everybody knows that that's what I do. I go to Richmond Park for 2 hours and that's in my diary and nothing gets in the way of that. The rest of the week, I fit it in around meetings and that's fine. But I always take at least an hour during the middle of the day, so at lunchtime, and then another hour at the end of the day. And I walk. I don't have myself plugged into any music. I literally just, and it sounds so new agey and hippie-ish, but literally looking at trees is one of the most calming things you can do. I also make sure that I see someone other than my husband, who is very lovely, but see someone who is other than my husband face to face at least once or twice a week. And I'm very lucky to have quite a few friends close by. So even if it's just meeting in the park, that face to face contact, having a conversation, we so underestimate how good that is for us. speaking to people face to face. Me and my friends always do video calls now on our phones. So I want to make sure that I look after myself, and then I can generally handle anything that the world throws at me.
Some great coping strategies you've shared with us, Penny. The last question, what are the three things that organizations must do to be more inclusive?
My main one is literally look at someone's skills. Don't look at where they went to school. Don't look at what their surname is and you know, search for it and see what their grandparents did. Just look at what they've done and look at what skills they've got that could really add to your organization. Don't just automatically do the easiest route when recruiting, which is to ask colleagues, you know, do they know of anyone? Because you will end up with all the same people that you already have working there and doing things in exactly the same way you've always done them. Mix it up. Search for a recruitment consultant that is actually outside of the three or four you would normally use. Use someone different that you know has a wider pool, a wider diverse pool of people. And then when people are actually in the organization, just stop and listen. Don't spend your time just speaking to those people that you would normally speak to in a meeting. I have learned the best things from people I don't know, people who are perhaps junior or just started in the organization, who don't look like me, who don't sound like me. Actually, just ignoring your first impressions. We all do it, myself included. You can't help it. You have a first impression of someone. I like to think, and I hope that I do this the majority of the time, is that my impression of someone is always on how they've made me feel. How have they left me feeling? Did I feel good after speaking to that person? Yes, I did. That is someone I want in my life. Whether it just be once every couple of months at an industry event, or whether I want them on my team, that is all I care about. And we need to go back to just being a little bit more human, and inclusivity will happen automatically with that. We do need schemes, and we obviously do need quotas. They're not going away anytime soon, but don't just tick a box and say, okay, well, yeah, we've got three women on the board. Just go a lot deeper and speak to the people that you wouldn't normally speak to, or the people that shy away from you when you walk towards them in the corridor. It's very difficult at the moment because I don't have those chance conversations anymore. So I think businesses really need to take a long, hard look at themselves. It's not about inviting people to the party, it's inviting them to dance. And it very much is. It's okay, great, you've ticked your box, you've got people in your organization that represent just how diverse you are. Good for you. Okay, let's have a look at how we actually promote everybody. Let's make sure that we're listening. Let's make sure that we spend some time with those people and actually just make sure that the opportunities are available to everybody. We have to be so proactive in these sorts of things. And I'm a massive, massive believer in that.
So many incredible stories and experiences. Thank you for sharing. Time has just flown by. And thank you for being a guest.
Thank you so much for asking me. If this can even help one or two people, then that's great. And I really, really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed it. So thank you. I think it's a great thing you're doing.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.